SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, about almost 10 minutes in, and Sid Fernando joins us, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and I want to slip in a Hill & Dale push, Army Mule, and Army Mule, going to get John Secure on here, because John's excited about his prospects, and of course a little bit of a late addition to the roster at Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Midweek, and we have a couple of different things, the ripped from today's headlines. And before we talk about a couple of things that came up, I want to ask you your impressions of the sale and anything you might have heard from clients as the 4 days of Keeneland really got the sale season either continued strong or off to a big start.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sale, as we've talked, pretty good sale, good at the top, especially. And it's basically the same pattern of, the game is getting kind of consolidated, Steve, at the top. And really, if you take this further, it's becoming more international. So, for example, the top guys here have no qualms, for example, about going to Europe, even Australia now. I think it's going to be a bigger trend as we move forward. I just read the other day, for example, that Bulletin is being targeted for Royal Ascot. I mean, stuff like that now is, becoming much more commonplace right now. And with the racing goes the bloodstock, too. We have guys coming here to buy international horses, international buyers in Europe, international buyers in Australia. There's an international class, which is really at the top of the game. And in a way, it's almost a disconnect from the local game, which is when you take the bloodstock sale, say, Keeneland, your cheaper horses are destined to race here, specifically for the North American market that's diminishing. So I think, you know, there's a lot to kind of talk about it, but it's a complex situation.
Well, the redistribution, basically, of bloodstock. I was thumbing through the OBS catalog at the end of the month coming up, and 2 day sale. That's got a little bit of everything. It's got short yearlings. It's got racing prospects. It's got broodmare prospects, and they're not really grouped either. I mean, that you start to go through the catalog, and it's like, okay, wait a minute. This is a short yearling. This is a racing ride. So you have to reorient yourself with every page you turn. But it is it's interesting just to look at the difference between these sales and watching to see who buys what. There's at OBS, there's a lot of mares that have been covered by, you know, that big group of Ocala stallions, you know, that in many cases are, you know, either trying to get a toehold or you know, catch a wave, uncaptured, you know, the ones that are trying to emulate Cantheros, basically. And
right.
I was intrigued to see some of the names. Actually, I left it downstairs on the I was doing it while watching TV and last night. But there were some interesting covers that could it'll be a couple of years from now. It'll be interesting to see who, you know, who when the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, I mean, that route is, you know, one of the things that takes place, Florida to Kentucky. You know, Stallion hits in Florida, and, you know, historically, that's kind of been the case. You know, moves to Kentucky for bigger opportunity.
Well, got the opportunity to touch on a few topics, and before we talk about the tweet from Francis the other night, I wanted you to also alert people to the piece you wrote about Spitestown, and this past week the column at and I forgot to mention that to you, that I thought that was worth taking a minute and discussing.
Well, yeah, when I wrote a column called The Spitestown Effect, which is something, you know, in practical terms, it was just kind of updating something I'd written at the Work Thurbert Consultants blog 4 or 5 years ago. And when I updated it, it fell right in line. Spitestown's a top Stallion, absolutely, you know, phenomenal horse. He now has 15 G1 winners. The interesting thing about Spitestown also is that his figures are, his stats are incredible. 80% runners, 60% winners, 10% black type winners. Those are all remarkable stats in this age of big books. Because usually the bigger book stallions, those stats have fallen, but he's remarkably held up those figures, which were in the old days, quote unquote, the old days. We used to have something called the 80-60 club, which is 80% runners from foals and 60% winners from foals, which were always really marks of tremendous stallions, Mr. Prospector, for example. And he has those stats. And he's got 15 G1 winners. Now, what I did do was I updated it from about 4 or 5 years ago. He's got, and the reason I called it the Spitestown effect is that there's an interesting thing about him, and so far it's held, and that is that he doesn't get 2-year-old G1 winners, and his first G1 winner is usually haven't appeared until July of their 3-year-old season. So when we've recommended the horse to people, we've pointed this phenomena out as an indicator of, well, you know, he's the type of horse that, even though he was a sprinter, looks like a sprinter, looks like an early horse, and he does get a lot of early 2-year-olds and 2-year-old winners. The best ones are those that are given a little time and appear later on in their careers. And people, you know, clients that we've kind of advised have known about this for some time. And he's a horse I recommend quite frequently in the business. But it's worth noting that if you are trying to get that G1, you might be better off waiting, because those are pretty stark statistics.
How about his? How about the sons? How many sons?
Well, he's got sons just coming to, you know, Munnings, of course. And Munnings is a horse, by the way, who didn't win his first stakes race. Even though he wasn't a G1 winner, didn't win it until, the summer of his 3-year-old season as well. I think there's a little of that in his sons as well. And I'll give you a practical application. Charles Fipke, a client of ours at WTC, of course, had Jersey Town, who didn't win his first, he won his first G1 late as a four-year-old, went to stud from his first crop. His first G1 winner was B. Jersey, who won the Met Mile at four. Now, what happened with B. Jersey was, knowing this kind of tendency, he'd been sent to Dubai to kind of come along slowly, placed second to Thunder Snow in the UAE 2000 guineas there. Then he was brought back here, given a little time off, and really aimed for a campaign, late 3- and 4-year-old campaign, and it worked out with him. He won that G1 as a 4-year-old, you know. So in his case, that seems to be the case. Now, there have been some Munnings seems to get earlier horses than his sire. And Poseidon's Warrior, of course, got a G1 winner, 2-year-old, and won that Champagne. So, you know, I don't know if it'll fully translate, but, you know, there's some elements of it, certainly.
Well, gotta admire, and, you know, feels like, you know, the one of those stallions that, you know, you know you're going to get something. You know, we bring them up every so often. You know, you'll see turf winner, you'll see,
yeah,
see them stretch, exactly, out, you know, further than some people might think, and puts a nice stamp. And speaking of stamping, explain, Sid, what the conversation that Francis kicked off on Twitter the other night about coloration. And you and I, right, have touched on this in the past, mm-hmm, mostly with grays, but explain the theories when it comes to, it seems like chestnuts get the focus of this, and I suppose Tappet, and in fact our friend Melissa on Twitter has got anecdotal evidence in terms of the kinds of Tappets that get produced. But this is a topic that I think, as an introduction for people that wonder about, you know, the themes and the currents in the breeding side, who gets what if a stallion has got certain properties, do you know if they're passing them along based on the color of the foal?
Yeah, I mean, when Francis, that's Francis J. Karen, tremendous pedigree, authority, as well as excellent writer and editor, what she brought up really was that she brought up anecdotally, since she worked for Four Star, that she'd noticed quite a few chestnuts in the first crop of American Pharoah. And essentially what she was pointing out was that American Pharoah's sire, Pioneer of the Nile, and his sire, Empire Maker, were dominant bay stallions, meaning that they only had bay offspring, no chestnuts. In terms of the breeding, there have been, you know, there are quite a number of dominant bay horses when you go back and look at them. Danzig, for example, only had bays. Of course, you know, they may have grays because that's considered quote unquote a mutation, but AP Indy, Dane Hill, as I mentioned, Empire Maker, Medallia d'Oro, Pioneer of the Nile, Sadler's Wells, Uncle Mo, Warfront, the son of Danzig. You're not going to get chestnuts by. They're not going to sire chestnuts because they're dominant bays, and it's a Mendelian inheritance, meaning, not to go into genetics here, but each stallion will, for example, use a dominant bay, say, has two genes that he passes on. So it may, that would be B and a B, and bay. So that's a dominant. That's dominant. So say he's bred to a bay horse. Or any other horse that bay gene is going to be dominant. Now you can have a horse that's not a dominant bay, but it's bay in color, like American Pharoah, where he passes on a bay and a chestnut gene. Now, if that mare is also has a bay, and she may be a bay too, but she may have a bay and a chestnut gene. And if those two chestnut genes match up, they'll have a chestnut together. So that's how a horse like an American Pharoah can, you know, pass on the chestnut coloration. There's two things here. One is that you're passing on a horse is either going to be a dominant bay or not, and the chestnut is always recessive. So to have a chestnut foal, you have to have a chestnut gene from the sire and a chestnut gene from the dam to get a chestnut foal, because the chestnut coloration is a recessive. So it's interesting to note that in the case of American Pharoah, as Francis pointed out, he's getting chestnuts, and it's a change from his sire and his grandsire. Sadler's Wells, tremendous stallion, was a dominant bay, but his son, Galileo, one of the great stallions of all time, is not a dominant bay. He does get chestnuts. So there's really no correlation in terms of, whether a stallion is going to be a great stallion or not based on that. But sometimes you'll know, I've noted, and there may not be anything scientific in this at all, but and I'll give you an example. The chestnut stallions sharpen up. I noticed a long time ago that his best runners tended to be chestnuts. So there was actually an incident with some buyers where we asked some buyers who were interested in sharpen ups at the time, this is years ago, to stay away from the bay offspring. And, it was a successful strategy for them. But again, to correlate the color with ability, I don't know that that's doable. In the case of Sharpen Up, which I've that I followed very closely, I did notice that there seemed to be a correlation in him with the chestnut and ability.
Interesting. And yeah. I mean, are there, and I was going to ask, I mean, is there from a sales, I mean, obviously you're not necessarily doing it to that extent, but I imagine that there's sales advisors that, that are using the same or have the same kind of notes and approaches. I've told that story that Gary told me, that Siaka told me, that John Nehrud, they spent a day together, looking at Yearlings, and Nehrud mm-hmm. said, don't ever buy one that's got a flaxen mane and a flaxen tail. He says they won't run. And, it's those sort of, anecdotal, I don't want to call them old wives' tales, because, they always have a kernel of truth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's always that type of stuff. And, of course, there's always exceptions to them. It's interesting because there's certain stallions, for example, there's a I'm not going to name the stallion because I don't want to put them on the spotlight. But a few years ago, we had a buyer who wanted to pay like $200,000. He had an advisor, but he was a client of ours, and you know they were going to pay go up to $250,000 on this colt by a certain sire. He ticked all the boxes, absolutely terrific walker, beautiful conformation, great pedigree, everything. And when the guy came to me, I said, look, the stallion gets like, you know, 80, his stakes winners are like 86% fillies. I said, you know, the odds are against you on this. And at the very last moment, he took my advice. About 4 years afterwards, when the horse had run and his racing career was established, he came back to me, and I'd forgotten about it. He said, you know what? I never mentioned this to you, but, you know, you saved me $250,000. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know that beautiful colt I wanted to buy? He goes, yeah. He said he's running for $5,000 today.
Hmm.
You know, he won like one race. But, you know, that was a case where the stallion had a very serious sex bias. And so, not that everyone is going to work out, but, you know, statistically in that particular case, we used the sex bias as something to go against what would have been a horse that ticked every single box. And of course, when I said that, his advisor at the time was just absolutely dumbfounded that I would even mention that. But, you know, it was just one of those things where we had some statistical information on sex bias that we used in that particular case to go against what seemed like, you know, just a slam dunk buy.
Well, when,
so
when
sometimes
you think,
the result here is that you can save a guy money by not buying.
Sure, of course. The same is true about wagers. The keeping the money in the pocket is as good sometimes as, you know, as cashing. And when you talk that sex bias to some degree, you know, the one that is the most probably widely, and I won't call it a bias, but it's certainly of note, Medaglia d'Oro and his fillies that. You know, seem to have, you know, that edge that at least this first half of his career, his fillies have been.
Yeah, he certainly started off that way.
Yes.
But he's gotten, you know, he's obviously gotten quite a few good colts.
No doubt.
But yeah, he certainly started off looking that way. And that's why sometimes you just have to let the years go by, getting back to the spite down effect that I talked about. You know, Spite Stallion's 21 now. He's at about 1,000-fold, and not a single 2-year-old G1 winner or G1 winner at 3 before July. So there, you know, you've got some big data there at least to sift through before. And it's not to say that he won't get one. It's just like Justify, you know, knocked off Apollo's curse. But you know, it does kind of give you some information to, you know, analyze what may be taking place. In the case of Spite Stallion, I pointed out, you know, that maturity that they might need was similar to what happened with Unbridled Song. You know, Steve, Unbridled Song came out early. A lot of really nice, promising horses. A lot of them got hurt. He got this reputation for being a brittle sire. But later on, when his offspring were given time to mature, he had a bunch of horses later in his career, including Arrogate and Forever Unbridled, this leading sire, 2-year-old sire, Cross Traffic, Gradar, Liam's Map. Just off the top of my head, I'm just giving you some horses. Horses that didn't race at 2 and won late at 3. And so what that showed was that, you know, when they gave him some maturity, he didn't have those same issues that he been labeled as a unsound horse earlier in his career.
Well, and it's funny, just this week, I don't know if you had a chance to hear the conversation we had with, off the win, Don Schnell, the win in the La Cañada. And he's got that mare.
Son of Unbridled Song.
Yes. And you also, I tied on, it occurred to me, I guess, was it yesterday, or might have been after we talked to Don, that Late Night Powwow. Yesterday I mentioned it. The really nice horse that Javier Contreras is having such success with, I think has won 8 of her last 9. And that's a Fiber Sond, who's another son of Unbridled Song. So for all the teeth gnashing, here's horses second generations from the Unbridled Song line, the Fappiano line, that are clearly sound. I mean, this mare that Don Schnell is campaigning, with every passing start, she's thriving. I mean, this is a horse that's thriving on work.
Yeah, if you can get those horses to that age and they're mature, and that horse, it really reminded me of horses and trainers and the whole ethic. Getting back to actually tying this into the sales question you asked me, this is the type of horse that is quintessentially the small guy's horse, you know, in the 70s, 80s. I mean, I remember there used to be lots of Don Schnells, and they used to, have a couple of horses here. Maybe they bred them, maybe they bought them, but, they put them on a van, ship them here, there, race them a lot. And it's really the game for the small guy. And it's great to see that, because that's the kind of the diminishing part of our game now. And that part of the game was really kind of what defined that blue collar racing that, was so prevalent before.
Part of this too. Let me ask you, I don't know if you saw Melissa's question or anecdote again along the color lines, and she's mentioning about Tappet that the boys, his best boys seem to be Chestnut, and the best of the fillies are gray, or if they're dark, they've got a blaze, and there is quite a few and the blaze seems to be wide all the time from him.
It's interesting. I saw that tweet just now. I was just thinking, I'm sure she's gone through this, and I'm sure she's correct, but I was just thinking, Frosted is a gray, Cupid is a gray, Taprit is a gray, right? So I'm just trying to think.
That's a few.
Well, Tonalist is a bay. And so I'm sure she's correct in that.
Well, it's anecdotal. It's just one of those things that you sort of, you in your own mind, there's certain ones that just sort of imprint on you.
Yeah. And, of course, when you get a really big gray sire, you're going to increase the number of grays out there running, too. So it's always fun to have a leading sire that's gray, because you tend to get the gray gene. Really goes back to the Tetrarch, the horse called the Spotted Wonder, and his sire and sire line. Most of the grays, if you go back and look through the pedigrees, you'll eventually come to the Tetrarch and his sire line somewhere down the line, and that's where that's become so prevalent, the gray gene.
A couple more gray males of his creator's gray.
Yeah, right.
And what about the Lanny too, gray?
Yeah, that's right. They did have a lot of grays.
Absolute. And Hanson. Hanson, his first one of his first
Hanson,
big.
Yeah.
I mean, we think of Hanson as his first big home run, but for me, it's Bandbox. Bandbox was his. That was the first Tappet that I remember sort of saying, look at this, a son of Tappet. I like Bandbox.
Yeah.
He was a Tappet before it was fashionable.
Yeah, that's right.
Sid, we got to round out the conversation too. I don't want our first big opportunity of 2019 when it comes to the 3-year olds. Don't want it to slip by. Have you had a chance to glance at that LeCompte field?
You know, I hate to say it, but I haven't been able to yet. Who do we have there?
Holy cow! It's a field of 15.
Yeah. Potential. 15. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
it's crazy. And Tappet leads the from the rail out. We got a couple of Tappets. Wicked indeed for the Winchell team, and they've also got tight 10. And as it happens, Wicked indeed Gray, but tight 10 Bay. So you got a couple of those to consider. Hard spun son Malpay for Joe Sharp drew the 2-hole. You got the Limehouse gelding Tackett for Dars and Mike Stidham coming off a pair of Fairgrounds wins. Golden Sense with the first of the season. Mr. Money for Brett Calhoun. There's the Warriors Reward for Keith DeSormo. Night Ops, Big Chief, Sal Cumin involved. Hog Creek Hustle. Vicky Foley sends out this overanalyzed Colt for Something Special Racing. The Sexton team, Hargis Sexton and Sandra and company, bred Hog Creek Hustle, $150,000 Keeneland Yearling. Roland for Tom Amos. This is a successful appeal colt. You've got War of Will, the Warfront that surprised in the slop, first chance at dirt. I say surprised. We just sort of didn't know what to expect from him that closing weekend at Churchill. But the Flaxman bred out of the Saddler's Wells mare. War of Will gets another try on dirt. Most Speed. Barber and Oxley, powerhouse partnership, the $500,000 Saratoga yearling. This is an Uncle Mo out of the Storm Boot Mare, Twin Hopes bred, Mark Cassie, of course. Chase the Ghost, Dallas Stewart with a Ghost Zapper out of the Holy Bull Mare. Himanshu Stable bred, Holy Cow Stable owns. Then we move to Pluska Parfait, the Point of Entry, Ridgeling for Imperial, and Brendan Walsh. And just missed, of course, the signal man in the Kentucky Jockey Club. And I'm never going to get that 15-1 again. And Manny Wah, who ran a good race behind Gray Attempt in the Sugar Bowl, comes back for the Catman. This is a Will Take Charge that the Mulholland's bred, Susan Moulton owns. And finally, Admire, Dale Romans, and the Albaz, the Cairo Prince son, that was a Keeneland yearling for $360,000. Brary Jones produced this one out of an Indian Charlie mare. That's got Airdrie up and down. This bay colt drew the 14 hole.
Wow, nice field, yeah. Nice early prep.
Big time. Big time. Yeah. And Steve Askin's going to discuss it next with me as well. You must. How many years did you guys overlap at the forum?
About five. I think about 5 years. You know, when Steve was originally the librarian there,
right?
And then Steve. It's all a haze. But then I remember when Steve was librarian, and then Steve started to write. You know, Steve had always written freelance stuff. But then he, I think it might have, I can't remember exactly, but then he started writing the Derby stuff and,
yep.
You know, it just took off.
Yeah, Joe handed it to him, and it was the handpicked successor. And he just wrote about, actually said, he just wrote about his start. He wrote a column this week 50 years ago, and you'll probably get a kick out of that. And
yeah, and I'd read another column he wrote where he was talking about his dad's letter. And I don't know if you ever read that column. His dad's letter, and Steve, it was very personal accounting of Steve's early years and how he ended up, becoming a writer. Go back and read that piece. That was really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to talk to Steve next, and this is the...
Tell Steve I said hello.
Absolutely.
And that is, and wondering when he's coming back on Twitter.
I don't know. I think he's had enough.
He got burned by that whole thing, and then there was a big backlash, and Steve just took off. I was the first guy that got Steve on Twitter. I asked Steve to come on years ago, about like 10 years ago, and I finally cajoled him to come on to Twitter, so I feel kind of bad.
Well, listen, it can happen to anybody. Both ends of this. I mean, Steve tries so hard to be nice to everybody. It was a very
ugly
scene.
It's in Twitter, You get on Twitter and you're going to get scorched like you and I do by POTUS capper. I think I just got scorched by POTUS capper today. What did he just say? He said, had you pegged as a Daisy guy.
Well,
there you go.
He better be careful with you because you know where the bodies are buried.
That's right.
Sid, this is great as always, and I do want to get an Army Mule conversation. And we were talking to the team at next week. Maybe we'll.
Yeah, absolutely. That horse a lot. And very talented.
Yeah, he's one of the few, because he joined the roster late. He's really one of the few available that has some openings in the book, and he matches up with some interesting horses and some interesting lines. So we'll talk about him next week, and looking forward to seeing you. We were comparing notes the other day. We're definitely going to be crossing paths down south at some point here in the next couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely, down in Florida in the south. We'll see you then.
And I never see you in New York, so
it's
a better chance to see you away from New York than in New York. Sid Fernando, everybody, and you can work with Sid. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And, of course, we're seeing babies, and we're seeing lots of foal pictures already. And when you know what you got from last year's cover and, you're making some decisions, plenty of time to bring Sid to your table, and they'll put together a broodmare compatibility analysis at Work Thoroughbred Consultants and help you, figure out what's next for your mares. Work with Sid Fernando and follow both Sid and Sire Watch as well. Sid, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. I'll see you next
Got
week.
It. Take a break and come back and bring in Steve Haskin. And I've been talking off air with Neil Howard, too. And I mentioned it yesterday, and then we ended up having, a guest right at the time. And I didn't get to fill out that discussion about Roddy McKenzie, who was the exercise rider that was really banged up in that tragic head-on collision at the fairgrounds. Last Monday, and I want to get Neil in, and there is a fund to help Roddy and his family, and I want people to be aware of it if you had not heard previously. Broken arm, broken leg, and he's had surgeries, and he's in good spirits and all, but Neil Howard is going to join us too. Slip in a visit with Neil to tell you how to help Roddy. Back after this with Haskin. We'll dive into this crazy group in the LeCompte, and we'll also fold in that other race at the fairgrounds tomorrow that's got some major players that will probably turn up in the Risen Star, and we'll be at Fairgrounds Risen Star Week Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday leading up to that terrific day. Second time in 3 years. I'm looking forward to it. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Talking away. I don't know what's left to say. I'm saying it anyway. Today is not my day. It's about you shying away. All the time we're real. I'm okay. Take on me. Take me
We're back at the races, and I just noticed, should have slipped it in with Sid. Charlie Bowden noted that Stardom Bound was the first major Tappet success, the first champion that Tappet got. That's I'd forgotten about her. Stardom Bound. Has she had, you know, there's a name. I can't think if she's really had any. In fact, while we wait for Steve, I'm going to look that up, what she's had for progeny. I can't, top of my head, and I'm going to go back and get to, I never looked up Tou Charmant after she came up, but she was out of, Stardom Bound was out of an obscure mare, a Tar Road mare. Wow. And bred by the Grays, by Fletcher and Carolyn Gray. I forgotten that. How about that? Two-year-old champion in 2008, and progeny-wise... She's in Japan. So we don't get to see her babies. That's why nothing came to mind right away. There you go. But don't just remember, though, no one wants our blood stock out in the world. Oh, except for Stardom Bound. And Champagne Doro. And so on and so on and so on. Steve Askin, I think, is standing by.
Yes, actually, I'm sitting by, but yes, I am here.
All right. Well, did you listen to Sid? We just finished up with Sid.
I did.
Well,
little extra airtime, huh?
Well, I thought that to ask. I don't think I've ever brought it up with him. Maybe I have about you guys overlapping. You're in the '90s at the Forum.
Yeah, Sid. Yeah, I was writing at that time. The thing is, I remember because when the Racing Forum basically, put the Racing Times out of business, the Racing Forum actually started taking in, and the Racing Forum actually was run. But guys like Neil Cook and a lot of the guys who were in charge of the racing, this is before Steve Crist took over. But they brought in a lot of the Racing Times guys, and they brought in, and Sid came in to write the his Bloodlines column. So from the time from the early '90s to '98, when I left, so Sid probably writes probably about five or six years that we worked together. And yes, Sid is the one who talked me into going on Twitter. I remember we were at Belmont Park. We were in the winner's circle, heading towards the winner's circle or so, just standing around, down Victory Lane. And Sid kept telling me about Twitter. He says, "You got to go on Twitter." I said, "I'm really not interested. I have no interest in going on here to write 40 characters or so. I have nothing to say. I'm not interested." And Sid said, there's so many things you could do. He said, "Here, watch this." And he took my photo. He took a picture of me, which I hate anyway, but he took a picture of me, pressed two buttons, and he said, "Okay, that photo's now on Twitter." And then he showed me on his phone the photo that he just took on Twitter. And I said, "Wow, that's pretty cool." I started thinking about it, and I said, maybe I could pick up a few things. I mean, I never posted, a photo that I took on my cell phone because it was a crummy. I think I might have still had a flip phone at that time, or maybe my early smartphone, which is not very smart anymore, but. But whatever it was, I was impressed with that a photo could go on in seconds, that there was a photo on there. But, that's when I went on, just to basically see what's going on in the industry and see what people in the industry had to say.
Well, it's a mixed bag, as they say.
Yeah.
Steve, I didn't want you are traveling tomorrow, so I didn't want to miss an opportunity though to talk about, and because they were way out ahead of it, the Fairgrounds does such a great job drawing their cards early. I did not want to miss you this week because it's too interesting a group. And then this morning, in addition to the 14 that'll likely run on Saturday, and I'm told by John Nichols is warning that the weather may be lousy, which would really be too bad.
Wait, today?
No, on Saturday. They're warning.
I give Fairgrounds a lot of credit, by the way. I mean, they draw 15 horses in that race, and 2 days before on today, they've got a really good two-turn allowance race.
Well, that came up with Chad Schexnader when I was talking about this race, and Chad said, the Risen Star winner may actually run in the allowance race.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he's talking about Gunnit.
Well, yeah, but what about what's wrong with Carnaccia?
Well, he's only run one time in 6 furlongs. I mean, we don't know yet anything about him. Of Gunnit has run twice, both times at 2 turns, and looked awesome winning last time at Fairgrounds. Not only that, but he's a $2.6 million a year thing. that's owned by Whisper Hill, who obviously bought it, and Three Chimneys has stayed in for a part of them. But Gunnett's the big horse. I mean, all these horses ran on the same day. There was on December 22nd. There was like four really strong 2-year-old races, maidens and allowance races, and several of the horses that ran that day. A lot of horses that ran that day are in the LeCompte, but a few of them are in here. And besides Gunnett, there's a horse on the rail, Owendale, who just got beat in an allowance race that day by Tackett, and with a big gap to third. And this horse has run five times already. So these are experienced two-turn horses in here. So we really don't know much about Cornacchia, except for the fact that, you know, he's run that one time on that day, and he ran in the 6-furlong maiden race and closed well in the stretch. He was a big, big favorite in the race, and he just got up. Didn't have the best of trips, but we'll see how good he is. I mean, Gainsway owns him. He's the son of Tappet. But he's out of an orientate mare, so I'm not quite sure how far he wants to go. But the big horse in here right now is Gunnett, because I know Steve Asmussen is very high on him and all the money they paid for him too, and he was really impressive in that last race. Just sat off the pace and just absolutely cruised to the lead on his own, and just drew off like a really good horse. So, you know, he's a gray, obviously, another Tappet gray. So we'll see how good he is.
Out of that race, we should mention, too, you know, he debuted in the race where King Ford upset Harvey Wallbanger, but then Harvey Wallbanger finally got over. You know, that's right. A horse that had really been a bit of a conversation point going back to the summer, and with Hal Lerner. And we had Harold during the summer at Saratoga after he won the Alabama, and Harvey Wallbanger came up because he was going to run back before the end of the meet, and he sort of became a bit of a watch horse, and pretty much every race that Harvey Wallbanger was involved in has proven productive, and then even the breakthrough race for Gunnett, that big Saturday, Marcus Hirsch and I did a big preview of that fabulous Saturday card on December 22nd. Courtyard came back. The horse that finished third that day has come back to win as well. So
it was a good day. It was a good day of racing. And there's another horse in there, too, that's interesting. Dallas Stewart has a horse named Frolicmore, who's probably going to run second in the Kentucky Derby at 30-1. Like all of Dallas Stewart's horses.
He's not enough, but he might not be enough of a deep closer. He feels like a stalker.
That's true. But he's only sprinted so far. Let's see what happens when he goes two turns. But he's coming off a nice maiden win, going 7 furlongs to Churchill Downs. And he, he's run four times, and he's run well each time. The only time he was out of the money was he was fifth in his first start to Signal Man. So, he's run against some really nice horses, Blue Steel, who's a nice horse. So we'll see with him. He's a more than ready. Actually, they only paid $25,000 for him at the 2-year-old sale. So you got a $25,000 horse running against a $2.6 million horse.
They don't know. They don't know how much was paid for them.
Exactly. That's the. Well, listen. A lot of times now, you'll find a lot more $25,000 horses who do well than the 2.6. Even though there aren't that many $2.6 million yearlings around, but a lot of these big price $2 million yearlings, a lot of them you don't hear about anymore. But they still like to buy them. But I mean, how many racetracks, by the way, are going to be able to get? I'm going to card a stake race on Saturday for 3-year-olds going on a Derby trail, and card an allowance race at, you know, at another two-turn allowance race 3 days before. Yep. I give him a lot of credit. And, you know, they got a good field in the allowance race, including got it. To me, you know, would have been bet pretty well in the LeCompte. But it was a smart move by Asmussen. I think he knew that there was a that was going to be a big field. He's got other horses to run in there, and he knows that a lot of these horses are way ahead of him. So I mean, Asmussen, he got the, you know, but the possible favorite in that race in Tight Ten, who stakes placed twice. You know, he's got trying to rebound off the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Had a horrible trip in there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him him as the favorite, and that's probably the main reason why Asmussen ran Gunnit in the allowance race, because I know he's got high hopes for Tight Ten. But that's a tough race to handicap. You know, I'm trying right now. I'm trying to put together my first Derby dozen, and you know, it's hard to get 12 horses right now that are fairly secure because of the fact that you don't know who's going to come out of the LeCompte or even this allowance race. I mean, if Gunnit looks awesome in this allowance race, you know, he could make the top 12. And there's several horses in the LeCompte that could make the top 12. Horses that I like a lot, that I've been very, very impressed with. You know, one of them I mentioned last week, this Plus K Parfait. I mean, he looks like he could be a really, really nice horse. I loved his race in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and he just seems to be getting better and better. And Mark Cassie has a horse from a visual standpoint named War of Will, who ran on the big Saturday card at Churchill Downs, at, you know, where every race is a two-year-old race. And I thought he was one of the more impressive horses who ran that day. He broke his maiden by 5 lengths, and he just absolutely cruised to the lead. I mean, he was never asked. Tyler Gaffalione was on there and never touched the horse. Just threw a few crosses, and then boom, he was gone. So I you know, he's a son of Warfront. He's a son of Warfront out of a Sadler's Wells mare. Mm. Sadler's Wells is popping up in a lot of different places here. And some of them are starting to be able to handle running on dirt. You know, I mean, Sadler's Wells has got dirt in his pedigree. You remember, you know, himself and Coolmore's other big stallion, Dane Hill. He's popping up in dirt pedigrees too. And he also, both of those horses, Sadler's Wells and Dane Hill, are both have brood mares who were legitimate dirt horses. I mean, Bold Reason was strictly a dirt horse, and Dane Hill's broodmare sire was His Majesty.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see how these horses run.
The depth in here is what makes this. And granted, you know, there's, I wouldn't even say majority. I guess probably half the field is making stakes debuts, right? Let's see. Wicked Indeed, Malpay, Tackett, Night Ops, Most Speed, Chase the Ghost, and Admire. So half the field, exactly. Half the field is making a stake debut, and the other half have not only, you know, run in stakes, they've run in some, you know, some serious company. So this is, you know, for January 19th, Steve, I mean, this is quite something that came together. And granted, I suppose I won't even say that if Oaklawn had been on their normal schedule and were opening this week, this wouldn't necessarily, Oaklawn wouldn't necessarily have sapped this group from anybody.
Well, listen, you know, they got a stake next week. So I mean,
that's right. They got the Smarty Jones next Friday.
Yeah. There's a horse in the Smarty Jones that I'm watching very closely. He's a horse that I had touted big time earlier from his maiden race because I was so impressed with a horse called Super Steed, and they ran him in the Sugar Bowl, going 6 furlongs,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was an interesting move. And he really didn't run very well. But I
he was awful.
Had a feeling that when this horse goes 2 turns, he's going to be he's still going to be a horse to watch. So I haven't given up. So he's supposed to run in the Smarty Jones, but watch out for that horse, Super Steed. He's a nice. I think he's a nice horse.
Let me tell you, Jinx Fires is going to beat him again with Gray Attempt.
Oh, he could.
We're with Jinx and Bridgemo. We're all in early on Gray Attempt. We had Jinx last. I couldn't wait to get Jinx on after vacation.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. I mean, it's wide open. This is the tough. It's the toughest year I can remember trying to come up with 12. And a lot of the horses that the most talented, a lot of the really really talented horses. You know, I've got question marks in their pedigree. There are names in there that you just don't associate. Song and a Prayer and Trippy and Successful Appeal. Just horses that you say, City Zip. You say, you know, I don't know. And these Derby horses, I mean, a lot of Into Mischiefs. And Into Mischief, like I said, is a magnificent stallion. But he normally needs help from the mare. If you want, you know, if you're starting to think a mile and a quarter, you know, mile and eighth. Fine, but a mile and a quarter is a different ball game, and I think the Into Mischiefs need a little help on the bottom line there. So we'll see. But there's a lot of Into Mischiefs around. But there's just a lot of horses that just don't have that classic pedigree. That there's always one horse in there that just looks like it might hold them back. So you just gotta. You know, either go by talent alone, or you just have to go in, you know, with a little trepidation. It's very, very tricky.
How many, you know, on that topic, let's see, who's here, who's involved here that is a among the first 3-year-olds? I guess just the Cairo Prince, right? Admire.
Well, Admire, we don't know how good he is. I mean, if you ask Dale Romans, I'm sure he's going to say he loves him. But, you know, again, we don't know. You know, he stretched him out from 6 furlongs in his second start. But, you know, ironically, you know, he put him on, he entered him in a grass race that was taken off the grass and running the slop, and the horse won. And now he finds himself in the LeCompte. But I got to tell you, you know, a lot of the horses I mentioned, you know, Type 10, Plus K Parfait, Admire, they're going to have to overcome some really bad post positions.
Yeah.
In here. I mean, they're going to be breaking way on the outside. And Plus K Parfait is in 12, Type 10 is in 11, Admire is in 14. And it's going to be tough to win from out there. So it's going to make the race even more unusual.
Well, what is, and it's funny, this came up, we didn't have a whole lot of time to talk about it with Jeremy yesterday. It was like the last 4 or 5 minutes of the show, but we were talking about the pace in here, and there isn't a whole lot of early lick, but with a field this size, you know that some riders are going to try to get away quick and establish position. But he and I were talking, and it looked to us like, you know, Malpay is certainly
definitely got to go to the lead. So he's right. Breaking from the inside. He's only sprinted twice. He's
Manny Wah,
6.5.
Manny Wah is going to go.
Which was
Manny Wah.
Well,
Manny
Wah. but he's also way on the outside, so he's gonna have to show speed, you know, coming off a sprint and mile races. So he's got some good early lick as well, and they're gonna have to send him. It's funny, he's one of the horses in the race that has that's bred for distance. I mean, he's a will take charge. You know, normally would associate will take charges with. The horse is having great speed. You know, the horse that we were talking about before, Owendale, who was beaten by his horse Tackett, he's in there. He's got an inside post in the LeCompte as well, and he's got some early lick as well. He showed good speed going 6 furlongs and then was right on the pace in his next 2 starts going 2 turns. So, you know, these are horses that have to get position. So we'll see. But Malpe looks like he's got the most natural speed. He, you know, breaking from post two, he's to me, he's going to have to go to the lead.
You'll see, you mentioned Tackett, who's been forwardly placed in two routes. I suppose if we look to, tight 10, I think probably would, after the problems in the juvenile, I think he wants to be in the vanguard, as Tom Durkin would say, most speed, probably set up shop behind speed. You know, the nice thing about Plus Que Parfait, and we talked about it with Brendan Walsh, even after the Kentucky Jockey Club. You know, he won when he went the two turns at Keeneland to break his maiden as part of the front end, and that was also over Harvey Wallbanger. Then, you know, he had the issue early in the Kentucky Jockey Club that found him mired behind horses, and he rallied nicely. And so he is a horse that, you know, feels like he can, at least has already proven with four starts, that he can adjust and is tactical. And and of course Leperoux's tendency is to, you know, to take back anyway. So I think wherever he sets up, he'll get his run. I even though there doesn't look like there's breakaway speed early in this, Steve, there's just too many horses to not have a fair, at least an honest pace once they get to the backstretch. But they should spread out pretty good. I think anybody that's good enough is going to get a chance to put a run in here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we don't know how good these horses are. I mean, a lot of horses we haven't even mentioned that we don't know how good they are. You know, I mean, Dallas Stewart's got another one in here. Chase the Ghost, who's coming off of maiden win, who's improved with every start. Most speed, another Mark Cassie horse, has won two in a row. When you won at Woodbine, and then won it off the turf or at Fairgrounds in an allowance race. You know, but so, you know, it all depends on the trip. If Plus Que Parfait gets a good trip, and the one thing about Fairgrounds is that Fairgrounds, you can lose ground at quarter pole. Fairgrounds, you want to come wide. You don't want to stay on the inside of Fairgrounds because there's usually all kinds of trouble down on the inside. Time I think of a horse trying to get through on the inside of Fairgrounds, it's something disastrous. Maybe I keep having Dollar Bill in the back of my mind because every time he tried to get through, he got. I mean, that poor horse couldn't find his way through anything. But I keep thinking horses, and then how many horses you see at Fairgrounds that all of a sudden come flying way out in the middle of the racetrack, you know, and that's what I'm looking at, at Plus Que Parfait. But, you know, the thing is that he deviated from his normal style when in the Kentucky Jockey Club. You know, he got shoved back to the way in the back of the pack and came flying late. But before that, he was right on the pace. You know, when he broke his maiden, he was running second the whole way. In the race before that, he was going head and head the whole way. So we really don't know. When he broke his maiden, the horse that ran third in the race that was well beaten finished way behind Harvey Wallbanger, was a Pletcher horse named Cutting Humor, who's running on Friday. In an allowance race at Gulfstream,
yep. So who I like a lot.
We'll see how improved he is. He improved with blinkers on first time. He gets obviously with blinkers again this time. He's a first samurai, so he's another horse that you're not quite sure. But that's another race to keep an eye on. That ninth race at Gulfstream. Not the greatest field, but there's some nice horses in there.
Well, did you hear Todd with me on, when was that? Was that Monday?
I did listen to Todd. Yes,
I brought that horse up.
Mentioned that. There was one horse that you didn't ask him about that I was really wondering about. The horse that I really really like. And I'm just waiting for him to work, but he's got a horse named King for a Day that was fourth in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and he hasn't worked since. And he's a horse, and he's a horse that made a big premature move in that race, and then had the lead in the stretch, and he ran a good race to finish fourth, I thought, considering he was wide the whole way and made an early move, but he was very impressive breaking his maiden. But he hasn't worked, so I have absolutely no clue. What his situation is. But a couple of the other horses that you mentioned to him, I really liked. A horse that I really liked from his first start was So Alive, when he came from the clouds in the first start. I mean, he just came from absolutely nowhere between horses to win sprinting. And then he didn't run well second time out, which was not surprising. He didn't run horribly, but then came back on his last start. I thought he looked good. So he's blinkered now, and he looks like he's improving. And of course, he's got the pedigree, being a brother to Vino Rosso.
Oh, that race you mentioned. You know, the other horse that you should bring up too, if we're going to talk about that race on Friday at Gulfstream, in addition to Cutting Humor, award winner comes back in that race for Brian Lynch and the Ammermans. Oscar performance.
He's definitely the horse to beat. I mean, we'll see. Well, I want to see what he does on the fast track, because he looked so brilliant in the slop. You know, he didn't do much in his first start at Churchill. Then when he ran at Gulfstream, he showed a lot of speed, you know. In fact, went right to the front and drew off very nicely in that race. So, you know, he's a ghost zapper out of a theatrical mare, so he's a horse you know is going to get the distance. But if he can handle a fast track and looks good in here, then he's got to be taken seriously.
Bourbon War,
yeah, coming off the Remsen. That's another... He's another one. He didn't run badly. And, you know, again, when you ask a horse to run in a ramp going a mile and eighth as a two-year-old in their second start, that's a pretty tough task. And he won an off the turf for the first time out, and then just ran basically an even race in the Remsen to finish fourth. But, you know, he's another Tappet. So we'll see what he does. I mean, there's a lot of interesting horses.
Very much.
By the way, one of the horses that I have to say, you know, I predicted after the Breeders' Cup when he ran on the undercard. I predicted that Audible was going to be the horse this year. I just loved his race, his comeback race. I mean, you know, I loved every one of his races. I mean, he looked great in Gulfstream. He looked great in the Derby. And he came back and looked great. And the race after that in the slop, I just throw out. I mean, that was just a horrible racetrack. And I thought he ran well enough. Watch out for that horse in the Pegasus. Don't discount him at all. I know there's a lot of good horses in there, but I think Audible's going to be a monster this year. So I think he's ready to run a huge race.
We'll talk about it next Thursday, and we'll have that entire card to peruse. And certainly Todd on Monday was not he was very calm and confident about Audible, and you know, he's not one to make a bunch of excuses, but he did lay out the couple of issues that may have contributed to, you know, to the beat in the Harlan's Holiday, and I don't think the horse he lost to is a bad horse either. So that's part of the story.
No, he's a nice horse. It shows you how different philosophies of training now. I always go on my soapbox about, you know, 2-year-olds who have been a distance and making their first start as a 3-year-old, you know, in sprint races, which is what every horse used to do. So I was curious to see what Todd was going to say, what he's going to do with Moretti, because you know, coming off an absolutely dead mile and an eighth race. I mean, the track obviously was very deep that day, and they went like 116, I think, or 141 for the mile, and 154.4 for mile and eighth. I figured, boy, this would be a perfect horse to just put back at a sprint race and just sharpen him up and get rid of that dull mile and eighth race, and Todd says this next start's going to be the mile and eight. Everybody's got, you know, it's different philosophies. You know, I'm certainly not one to contradict his decision, but I'm just saying the old school would be, you know, just sharpen his horse up, run him at 7 furlongs. If you think you got a good horse, you don't have to go after, 10 points early in the year. Run him in a sprint race, sharpen him up, and then stretch him out again. But, you know, obviously that's not the way trainers do things nowadays. They don't want to sprint horses. So here he's running back in another mile and eighth race in the Withers. So, but he's got some nice, he's got some nice horses that are under the radar that he mentioned. That Federal Case looks like he's getting better right now. And we'll see what Cutting Human does in the allowance race.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.